Hello again and welcome back. From the art of the Renaissance in our last segment to the world of contemporary art, specifically contemporary African-American art, our guest is Thelma Golden. She is the director and chief curator of the Studio Museum in Harlem, long considered the leading center for contemporary African-American art. She has been called one of the most important and unique voices in the global art world. And President Obama has appointed her to the Committee on Preservation of the White House. Joining me for our discussion is our newest newsroom edition, fellowship producer Aaron Williams. Thelma and Aaron, thank you so much for being with us. Nice to have you here.
Thank you. Great to be here.
I'll get it started, Thelma. Do you mind if I call you Thelma?
No, not at all. Good.
You know, you speak of artists as change agents and many of the things that you've written and said. How does art give shape to cultural change?
I think artists are important thinkers and seers about any particular moment. I think that history is best understood in many ways by looking at it through artists. But I also think artists provide us with an amazing opportunity to be able to understand the context we live in. They ask important questions. They think about things deeply. And through that, I think we have an amazing opportunity through art to live in the world in a more profound way.
All right. And Aaron?
Well, in fostering this conversation, it seems that it's essential that the museum's role is to make all members of the community feel included in order to stir these conversations. How can a museum do that?
Well, I think if museums understand themselves as sort of organic beings, right, not necessarily just physical structures to house objects, but as places that can, in a community, provide what a community needs in terms of a space for dialogue, and using art as the center of that, that is a way that museums can be more accessible. I also think museums can make themselves more accessible by opening up the conversation about art to people who think perhaps that art isn't a part of their life or does not have a role in their life. And I think museums, through the work that we do educationally, through the work we do with interpretation, opens that up for wide audiences.
For people who don't necessarily think that art is a part of their life, how can they help to push that in? Because I know that, you know, there are some people who think, oh, you know, museums, that's nice, but still, how can they become engaged in that?
Well, often when people say to me, oh, I don't think I'd be interested in going to a museum, or oh, I don't know if I'm interested in art, I ask them, are you interested in ideas? Are you interested in truth? Are you interested in beauty? Because if you're interested in those things, then art is a place where you can find them. I also think, though, that in the world we live in, there is such a desire on the part of people to connect with other people, to think about things in space with other people. And museums are really amazing places to make that kind of exchange happen.
What distinguishes black art from the rest?
Well, I don't think something distinguishes black art from the rest. I think what distinguishes black artists is the way in which perhaps they bring culture and identity to their art. But I say that with a big condition, because I think all artists bring who they are to their artwork. I happen to have an incredible passion for African-American culture and the cultures that come out of Africa. And my own expertise is an artist of African descent. But I don't think anything distinguishes that in a different way from any other art that is made.
Mm-hmm. For the newest generation of artists, the overarching achievement, or not achievement, but event, of the civil rights movement is not necessarily the core of their identity with race, but rather it's the dialogue that they're trying to create around art. It seems to be a factor, not necessarily the factor. What can older generations learn from their work and from the message that they're trying to cultivate?
Well, I think all artists are a product of their moment, and I think the generation of artists of African descent who are working now are very much a product of the civil rights movement. I think they live in the space that was created in that important part of history. It's what opened up museums. It's what's created institutions like the one I work in, the Studio Museum. It's what created a definitive sense of how we understand culture and history. So I think that what we learn from artists now is we learn how the sort of vestiges of the great legacy of that movement play out in real ways in the work that artists are making.
Is there a generational aspect to this? I mean, the civil rights movement goes back 50 years and certainly beyond that, but I wonder if younger people today understand it and appreciate it and see it as the artists intended it to be seen.
Oh, I think they do. And I think artists working today understand we're living at another moment deep in history that will be definitive and define the way we understand this moment. Again, that's what I think is so interesting about artists. Artists who live in their time, who live of their time, who speak to the moment that they come from and reach back, of course, to history, but also in many ways are projecting the space that we will be living in as we move on.
You know, I saw one of your speeches or presentations, mm-hmm. I should say, and you showed a couple of paintings as part of a PowerPoint presentation. And you asked the audience if they could identify which one was done by an African-American artist. Mm-hmm. One was Washington Crossing the Delaware, mm-hmm. or a facsimile of that. Another mm-hmm. one was a kind of an inner city mm-hmm. look. And what surprised me was the fact that one was done by a white artist and one was done by a black, and it was just exactly the opposite of what people might have expected. This is something you must run into in your work.
Well, in that particular case you're referring to, those were two works that were in an exhibition that I made yeah. in 1994 called mm-hmm. Blackmail, one by Robert Colescott, the now deceased African-American artist, the George Washington Carver Crossing the Delaware, and the other one by Leon Golub, who was a white artist. And in that exhibition where I was looking at how profoundly the image of black masculinity from the late 60s to the present really spoke so much to our understanding of race in American culture. And those two works, for me, in so many ways exemplified what was critically important about the way in which artists help us understand the complexity of images, the idea of positive images and negative images, the ideas about authorship, who gets to define who we are and what we are. But often I think that if we try and look at work as a way to define it through these categories, it's not the most complex way to understand the breadth and the depth of what artists do.
And of course, this is not something that's totally contemporary. You can take this all the way back.
All the way back. Completely.
Probably all the way back to Leonardo da Vinci, about
that's
whom
right.
we spoke,
exactly.
spoke earlier.
Exactly.
Yeah.
When you choose to bring in a new exhibition to the museum, how do you go about figuring out, A, who do you want your audience to be, and how much time you want to invest in getting to know an artist when you want their work to be shown?
Well, at the Studio Museum in Harlem, the studio in our name comes from the fact that we have a studio program. There are three artists who are with us every year. This has been the case since our founding in 1968. So we invest deeply in artists, and our commitment to artists is to support them at that early point in their career, but to sustain that support throughout their career. In terms of exhibitions and bringing them in and who we want to be our audience, we continually at the Studio Museum want our audience to be the widest audience possible. You know, we were founded with the distinct premise of really engaging a large audience in the breadth and depth of work made by artists of African descent. When we were founded, this was something that not many institutions did, so we were really paving a way to redefine art history with these contributions. And now we see ourselves as being able to do that in an increasingly interesting and fertile global art world where the dialogue around people of African descent is defining when we think about the 21st century.
How well represented are African American artists in museums, aside from yours, across the country?
Well, they are, and I think it is really the pioneering work of curators and institutions that were founded at the moment that my institution was, and even before, that have made that the case, that when we go in the major institutions all around this country, there are works by African-American artists on view, works by artists of African descent. Is it enough? Is it as deep as I would imagine and hope it would be? No, but that's what drives my work. That's what makes me make the exhibitions I make. That's what makes me want to be in the world thinking about black artists.
Before Erin has her next question here, I'd like to remind our audience that they can get in on this conversation if they'd like to. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We, of course, will take a tweet at STL On Air. You can also reach us through Facebook. Our guest is Thelma Golden, and she is in town, by the way, for the Contemporary Art Museum's Susan Sherman Annual Distinguished Speaker Ceremony at the museum this evening at 7 o'clock. That's the Contemporary Art Museum's Sherman Annual Distinguished Speaker. I'm having trouble saying it, but I hope folks got the message. We have information about that on our website, stlpublicradio.org. Erin?
How do you want your ideas of uniting race and culture to translate to other cultures outside of the African-American culture? How do you want that message to go further? What are your hopes in that?
Well, my hopes are that, you know, we continue as an institution and personally as a curator to be able to create and define what this dialogue can be, and by making exhibitions and putting out there these ideas, which really show, you know, again, what the possibility within contemporary art to think about identity, race, culture, and community in really interesting ways.
Do you want art to, when, I guess the question is rather, when African-American art is produced, do we want it to come to a point where we can say, oh, this is just art, or do we want to continue to define things by, oh, this is African-American art, this is from the African diaspora, when it goes into other museums across the country or is seen by other people around the world?
I think we want both. It's not an either or. It's not, you know, a question of one or the other. I think that we come to all art as art, but we also, living as we do in the world, really are profoundly changed by the experience of understanding culture in the widest way. So understanding the specificity of artists, who they are, what they think about, what inspires and influences their work, which can be culture, it can be community, can be many things. I think holding both together is an important way to think about how we can think about art.
Is it important that it be identified as African-American art? Why not just identify it as art? We talk about African-American art. We don't talk about white art. We might talk about Chinese art or Bosnian art. Why is it important to so designate it?
Well, I think that's a designation that is often created by others. I think it's important to designate specificity. I think it's important to understand what things are and what they mean. And at the institution where I'm very privileged to be director, we come out of a community, we come out of a space, we come out of a cultural experience that is defined by African-American culture. So it's important to link and to root ourselves in the place that we come from.
You know, given your location, Harlem, I'm curious as to what the community in and around where you are reacts to what you're doing.
Well, the community in and around where we are is us, right? So we don't see ourselves as not part of that community.
You know, I'm thinking really of young people and people who would be exposed to things they might not otherwise be exposed to if you weren't in that particular location.
Right. Well, having been there for almost 50 years, we are very much a part of it. So I think that what we know and what we hope is that we have the great advantage and privilege in Harlem of being in a community which really in many ways has defined African-American modernism. I mean, it's the home of the Harlem Renaissance, you know, a moment without precedent in terms of its vitality around Black culture. So we really are living within the legacy of a cultural space that is really important and still lives today.
You know, I was kind of thinking of it in terms of Jeffrey Canada, for instance, and we're all familiar with the great work that he's doing in that area, and the fact that he's reaching youngsters that might otherwise not have been reached quite so easily. And that's what I'm thinking of with art and the impact that it can have on the young in a community like Harlem.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons the Studio Museum was founded. So just like, you know, Mr. Canada's work has created in a concentrated but profound area which has national import, you know, we have created in Harlem an institution that influences and infects the lives of all Harlemites by our being there, by being open, by being accessible, by becoming a part of not only the life of people coming in the museum, but also their lives as they're out in the community itself.
At the same time, having been there for 50 years, you can see what the community benefits from most, and you can have an idea of, I feel like we should showcase this, or I feel like we need this. How do you decide that when you want to bring in someone new?
Well, I think when we are thinking about what we present, we sort of look at it from two points of view. There is one part of our program where we know as an institution that we sit on the edge and we are able to bring to the museum new work, new ideas, and present them in ways that allow our audiences to see them first. On the other hand, however, because we do sit in such a historic community, we have a great, great, great responsibility towards the past. And some of the work we do is about keeping that past, that history present, in the present day. So our program really has two sides that come together, and all decisions look at those two different ways of presenting work.
What are the decisions you have to make when you're putting together an exhibit, for instance? Mm-hmm. How is that done as director and curator? I mean, you must have to take a lot and boil it down, compress it somehow into a manageable exhibit. How do you do that?
Well, I think the way we do that is really starting with the goal in mind. And again, our mission has stayed the same from our founding, and that is to really present, preserve, and interpret the work of artists of African descent. So starting with our big mission, every decision is made about how we can do that. In terms of the specific decisions, that really comes down to our curators, right, who all come to the table. We have an amazing team at the Studio Museum with really specific and different interests, different expertise, and they really formulate a thesis with each exhibition, which is furthering our mission. And so that's how we make the decision. But it's hard. We certainly don't get to do every exhibition we want to do, but we also, there are moments where things are so clear. Like, for example, right now, November 30th will be the centennial of Gordon Parks' birth, the sort of pioneering photographer, filmmaker, writer. And we have an exhibition up of photographs that Gordon Parks took in 1967 in Harlem. He spent a year with a family named the Fontenelles, and this was on an assignment for Life magazine. They published it in 1968 in a special issue about poverty, and Parks wanted to show America the face of American poverty at that time. And we are now showing those photographs again in this moment, celebrating his centennial, but also to look at the community we are in and look at it in its past.
How diverse are the people who come to your museum?
Very. Yeah. Extremely.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's good to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And at the same time, you know, the Gordon Parks exhibition, it keeps with your message of showcasing the past, remembering the past in a way, and showing how it can translate for the future, and showing people what their community was like back in that time, and what they can learn from that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably the goal that you have for every exhibition.
Through the eyes of a great artist. It's showing that through the eyes of a great artist.
That's wonderful.
Who are the great African-American artists of today?
Oh, of today. I don't know if I can answer that. You know, as a curator so deeply steeped in the community, there are important and amazing voices, and I feel privileged to have worked with many of them. I think what's important for me now is that to nurture the artists of today, but also to look at the past. And there are certainly artists that we just last year celebrated the centennial of Romare Bearden, this year celebrating the centennial of Gordon Parks. A few years ago would have been the Norman Lewis centennial. These are pioneering figures, African-American artists who really achieved against all odds, right, and brought to American art a vision. We mourn the passing last year of Elizabeth Catlett, another giant of an artist, and really continue to celebrate those artists whose work in the 20th century really defined the space that we're living in now.
Do you think that they have received their due? Over the years, when we're talking about centennials, and
yes,
a lot of these names I'm sure are not familiar to
yes,
many people listening right now.
Yes. I think they all achieved great critical and artistic acclaim in their lives, but I do believe, and it is very much my own mission and the mission of my institution, that they have not received, mm-hmm, say, all of the attention they should, all of the historical attention, art historical attention. And that's the work that we do, and that we also are thrilled that many of our peers and colleagues and other institutions are doing as well.
Mm. Go ahead, Erin.
How do you work with people who think, oh, art is just painting on the walls? How do you show that art can be translated into multiple mediums and shown in multiple forms, mm-hmm, and that people can get a real appreciation out of it, outside of that?
The way in which we try and open up people's idea of what art is and can be is by showing a broad range of art and artworks, and using that as a way to open up the conversation that allows for the kind of deep interpretation which opens up the idea of what artwork is right now, how it relates to ideas people might have of art in the past, but also how it's projecting how art continually changes and will begin to see and be in the future.
We were just talking about, you know, artists that are the most important artists of today. When it comes into looking at artists in the future, what is it? What is that defining characteristic that you see that you think, okay, that is someone that is going to continue to do good things? That is someone who is going to continue to resonate past their one exhibition right now. What is that characteristic?
You know, I can't define it as a characteristic. I can't name it. I know it. I see it. I've had the privilege of, you know, working with many amazing, brilliant, innovative artists. And it's a combination of factors that really continually, for me, sort of define a space that I can only name as perhaps significance. Significance. You know, it's the feeling of that in the work, and it's the feeling of that in the experience of seeing that work over and over that makes me know that.
What are you seeing in terms of innovation in young artists today? Dealing with mixed media, this is an entirely different world than the people whose lives we are celebrating in these various centennials. Mm-hmm. It's a different world. What are you seeing that's changing?
Well, I see artists changing in the sense of how they're using materials, but in some cases they're using the same materials artists have used for hundreds of years. They're just bringing their own ways of working with them to the fore. So, for example, we have an exhibition on view right now called Four, and there are many painters in this exhibition, and artists have been painting for years, and people want to constantly sort of announce the death of painting, and we know that that's just not a reality. That's a sort of mythology. But what I see artists doing with painting is what changes it and shifts it. I also think that what I see in terms of artists in their work is a freedom to imagine how their work, what they can use to make their work, but also how they can present it can change.
Yeah, it's a digital world now, and they can make it accessible to so many more people so much more quickly, can't they? Mm-hmm. And they're doing that,
I gather.
Yeah.
They are.
You have a thought, Erin?
Oh, well, I would just wanted to add, you know, in the mission of the Studio Museum, you know, to involve as many people as possible in the work that they are producing, how do you hope that that translates to other museums, other places across the country? What you're doing as far as just nurturing and and cultivating artists internally and producing them to the world. How do you want that to translate?
You know, I think that the business and the art of running a museum right now is one that can only really be effectively manifested is by being very specific and very local. So for us, this idea of nurturing artists and having the process of art and the presentation of art exist in the same building makes sense for what we are and who we are as an institution. That would not necessarily be what every institution should be. It should be responsive to the space and the locality that institutions are in. I never, before working at the Studio Museum, I never really thought of institutions around this idea of the local in such a specific way. And I never really imagined thinking about these things in this way. But being in an institution which, as I say, has on the one hand this kind of backwards looking to its history, right? The historic moment it came out of, but is always looking forward as it exists in a community that's transforming. That's how I think all institutions perhaps can find their own very personal mission and be able to enact that mission in ways that are really important and interesting for the community that they live in.
Thelma Golden, you obviously have a lot of energy, and I'm sure you're going to bring a lot of that energy to your presentation tonight at the Contemporary Art Museum. That, again, is going to be at 7 o'clock. What's the topic of your speech tonight?
Just museums, culture, and community.
All right. Simple enough. I'm sure people will look forward to hearing more from you. Thelma Golden, thank you so much. Again, 7 o'clock tonight at the Contemporary Art Museum. Tomorrow, and say, Erin, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Tomorrow in St. Louis on the Air, we're going to take a look at two films documenting the aftermath of the Joplin tornado. And then we'll talk with Elaine Veitz about the latest in her Josie Marcus Mystery Shopper series. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.